When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, it's time to go inside the green room with Danny Green.
What's good, everybody? Welcome into Inside the Green Room with Danny Green. I'm Harrison Sanford. You know the vibes already. If you're following us on Instagram, Inside Green Room, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Green Room Inside. If you're listening to us on your podcast apps, you could also watch us on YouTube. And please, pretty please, give us a 5-star review. It is always appreciated. Over on this side, we're going to talk about some big developments, injury news, in the National Basketball Association. Big news with the Philadelphia 76ers. Big news with the New York Knicks. But we have to start with the marquee of Monday night in the world of basketball. And it was not the NBA, y'all. It was the women's game. And the women's game absolutely produced, particularly Caitlin Clark from Iowa.
Did not disappoint.
They took on LSU in a rematch of last year's national championship game. And this time around, it was Caitlin Clark absolutely going off. 41 points, 12 rebounds, tying an NCAA record for three-pointers made with 9. She accounted for 71% of the Iowa offense. And what's crazy, Danny, is that we know LSU is a very good team. Exactly, the reigning national champion. And you would have thought there was a game plan out there that could stop somebody like Caitlin Clark. Now, I'm not saying Caitlin Clark is like Steph Curry, but there's a lot of similarities. How in the world do you stop somebody with that lethal of a shot who really has the defense in the mixer for the entirety of the game because of the incredible gravity that she provides?
It's tough, man. But to correct your mistake, she had 7 rebounds, 12 assists, and that's what makes her harder to guard. You said 12 rebounds. I said she had 12 assists.
Oh, my bad. 12 assists, 7 rebounds. Yes. My fault.
Yes, yes. So that's what makes her harder to guard, because not only can she score, but she can assist the ball. And that's what somebody had a take the other day saying, is she a better passer than she is a scorer? It's kind of like a LeBron James type of thing. You know what I'm saying? You kind of have to guard her one-on-one like you have to guard Bron, because if you double him, he's going to make you pay. And her teammates are good enough to score. Obviously, other people stepped up and played well. She had more than one teammate in double figures. They scored quite a few baskets. They scored 94. It's higher than most men's basketball games, 94 points. So they scored more than enough. But so the fact that she could pass so well, and she's a bigger guard, she can shoot so well, she knows how to shoot off-balance shots, step-backs, create space.
Yo, her off-balance, her off-balance accuracy is probably the most impressive thing to me, because as somebody who's been known as a shooter, like, you try to get the perfect form every time. You try to rise up the same way. You try to land the same way. She will be going to the left, landing on her left foot, falling over, or on the other side. It's crazy, her amount of balance, but it's amazing her accuracy even when she isn't balanced. Like, it's really, it's truly remarkable.
Well, there's a reason why Michael Jordan was so good, because he found out earlier before anybody else that the fadeaway jumper is unguardable and you can't really block it or affect it. Especially his size and athleticism, her as well at her size, it's hard to affect it. And if she's perfected being able to shoot a fade that way, it's hard to contest or block it unless you have a bigger person on her, which is not fast enough to keep up with her. That's what makes her unguardable. But like I said, and the other aspect is that the fact that she can also assist and get her teammates involved, which I think might have been a little different story from last year. She had a good team. I think her teammates are better. Everybody, the whole group matured more, and that's where they flourished and were able to put LSU away.
I guess she can now, right? When you were in Toronto, this is a little bit more difficult. Let's go back when you were in San Antonio. How similar would your game plan be to guard Steph Curry that could be similar to guarding now Caitlin Clark? What was the game plan to guard Steph Curry? Because again, their games are very much similar. Her gravity, her constant movement, her off-balance shooting. I think what makes her really special too, and this is what makes Steph special as well, it's not just that he's a great shooter, You can't predict when he is going to shoot. Like, it's sometimes guys need a set shot. You know it's coming. Steph will just be like, all right, I'm shooting right now. 22 seconds in the shot clock. And that's what makes it so perplexing for the defense, I would assume.
Back to my point, Steph was so hard to guard because he had so many great pieces around him. If he was on a team like Portland with Dame Lillard, the only guy, it's easier to game plan for a guy like Damian Lillard, even though he'll still get buckets. But for him and his team, it's probably easier to trap him, you know, when he didn't have CJ McCollum than it is a Steph Curry. When he has Klay Thompson, KD, you know, even before KD, he had Harrison Barnes, Livingston, Iggy. They had so many guys that could hoop and that could score. You can't guard him. And even when those guys left and they had KD, or when they all left, the main focus, they changed the game. They changed the league because they went small ball. So the most important person on the floor to guard, honestly, was Draymond. Because he initiated the offense. And not only is he initiated the offense, he's setting the screens for these guys. So you can't just let him quarterback. And when he screens, you got to be able to switch out or be able to jab at it and get back to Draymond and make him finish or make him play a 3-on-2 or a 2-on-1 type situation on the backside. It's tough because Steph wasn't there alone. If he was there alone, it'd be a different type of team. And it might be a little bit easier to game plan for him. But because you can't just game plan for him, you have to game plan for Klay. You have to game plan for Iggy. You got to game plan for KD or Harrison Barnes, whoever else they had there that was really good. They had a whole different group before KD got there, but they were still really good. I'm thinking of his name's not coming to mind right now. French guard, really fast.
Barbosa.
Yeah. You got guys like that coming off the bench for you. You know what I'm saying? These guys are running and gunning. They're going and they're hooping. And they had David Lee early on. They had Sean Livingston mid-range 99, you know, and 2K type mid-range. So it's hard to stop those guys. But if he was on a team like Portland or if he was like in Charlotte or something like that, or it'd be way easier to game plan for him. Only other person I can think of that was like easy to game plan was like when Kyrie was in Cleveland before Bron came back. You know what I'm saying? Like, even then he would still get buckets, but you could kind of try to slow him down. But when guys get those pieces around them, there ain't no stopping that.
All right. So one thing that was pointed out during this Iowa and LSU game, and I thought it was for me personally, it was a fascinating thing to see develop on social media. Mm-hmm. So majority of the game, Kim Mulkey, the head coach from LSU, decided to use Haley Van Lith to guard Caitlin Clark. Haley Van Lith is like 5'7"-ish, 5'6"-ish, while Caitlin Clark is 6'1", 6'2". And Andrea Carter, who you've worked with before at ESPN, pointed out that maybe Flauje Johnson would have been the better defensive option for Caitlin Clark. But that did not happen. Caitlin Clark did her thing regardless. With that being said, though, what really was fascinating to me, Danny, was I would go on social media during the game and I started to see people and Twitter accounts making fun of Haley Van Lith and her inability to guard Caitlin Clark. And why it was so fascinating to me is because I've been covering sports for a very long time, and I'm used to seeing NBA athletes getting trolled. I'm used to seeing NFL players get trolled. I'm used to Major League Baseball players get trolled. This was the first time, Danny, that I have seen a women's basketball player or a woman athlete in general really get criticized and made fun of on social media. And it's great where the women's game is right now, and I'm so happy so many eyeballs are on it. It's a great thing for the game, but with all those eyeballs comes the negativity on social media. And I am curious, and I hope that these young women, as they start to see their names become more and more populated on social media, can handle all the things that are going to now come to them, which is something they never prep for. Like, for example, Danny, like, if you are Cooper Flagg, who's one of the top players in high school basketball right now, he knows when he gets to the NBA, he's going to get dragged if he plays a bad game on Twitter. He knows it for a fact because he's seen his predecessors do it. We have never seen so much engagement in the women's game. And you know, with engagement comes the celebrations, but it also comes to negativity.
You know why, though? It's not like it's coming from nowhere.
Yeah, for sure. It's the nature of the beast. If we're interested, if people are interested, we're going to criticize.
Yeah. There's a couple of points I want to attack here. One, Nobody's guarding Caitlin Clark. So to act like Haley is, you know what I'm saying? Like she's the only person. And coach, yeah, she could have mixed it up and thrown different people on her. Neither one of them is stopping her. But I have seen Haley play defense this year, and she has been working hard, and she's been doing her thing. So I like that matchup for them to try to slow her down. She did take 29 shots. She made 13 of them. That's below 50%. Even though she went off from 3, 9 for 20. So, like, but nobody's stopping her. She's going to get her shots. She's going to get her spots. And a lot of them transition or steals or miscommunications. Also because her teammates aren't bad. They have to be play her honest. You can't just double her and, you know, keep the ball out of her hands because they're going to hurt her on the backside. That's one thing. Two, there's a reason why I said it comes with the territory. When you win a national championship, there's already a target on your back. Not only do you win a national championship, but you bring on the villain role and, you know, you trash talk a little bit, you trash talk others. People can't wait to get on that bet. That's why people were excited to see this game. Not because it's the top two players, but the top two players met last year and there was some trash talking that happened last year. And some people, they was on the fence of, was it, you know, bad taste and bad taste worthy type of actions, you know, that type of thing. Was it, what's the word I'm looking for?
Bad sportsmanship.
Unsportsmanlike. Was it unsportsmanlike? Was it, you know, we didn't like how she celebrated. And some people were like, nah, we like how she, but because it was on the fence of some people think it was unsportsmanlike and not class full, people that was classless. That's why those people are waiting to talk trash. So when you have two stars match up and also that there was some trash talking happening last year, there's going to be a target back and they're going to wait for you to fall. And not only just last year, but throughout the whole year of last year and this year, you know, that's the mantra. That's the precedent. That's what you set for yourself and the group. So when that happens, you can't turn around and say, oh, you know, you can't believe all the things. Like, you can't play victim after you take a loss. You got to take your loss and take it on the chin. You know what I'm saying? Like the villains we have in our league, Pat Bev, the Dylan Brooks, like they're like, all right, I'm going to talk my trash. But it's, when it comes, obviously it's draining and nobody should be doing it. We don't condone it at any point, especially these young women in college. They don't deserve that type of treatment. But if you're going to do that, now it's like, all right, now you got to know what comes with the territory and be able to handle it. And I think moving forward, things will change or they won't. But if they don't change, you can't be saying, oh, we can't expect that. But if you don't want that, don't want to play that role and you can't take on that type of heat, you got to change how you approach certain aspects of the game. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So once again, I'm with you on this. It's different. It's weird to see women being ridiculed or negativity on social media or made fun of. I don't think it should happen for any sport, but it comes with the territory, especially on the high level when you guys are getting yourself to that stage. And, you know, Caitlin Clark said the women's side is getting more interest and entertainment than the men's side. Like, so now you're on that platform. When you get that type of entertainment, that type of traction, it's not only, it's not going to just be all positive. You're going to get all sides of it. And, you know, this is where you get paid the big bucks. And hopefully this is a good thing. The more you get that draw, the more you get that, the more, you know, viewers, the viewership, the more money you guys are going to make and generate. Hopefully, is it worth it? So that's something you guys have to discuss between yourselves. Is it worth generating that type of viewership with the negativity? Because the drama is what really pays the big bucks.
You can't get no drama and no monetary.
You can't ask for big bucks and not have no drama in your your entertainment value. You need the drama, so you need some of that negativity that comes along. But said, I hate to see it. I don't like it. I think these women played their heart out. They were great. I'm a big fan of Haley's, a big fan of all of them. Angel, Caitlin Clark, all of them, Flo. They're all dope. They can hoop. And I love what they brought to the game. And I just wanted to keep it positive. But just forewarning them, if this is the steps you're going to, and you say you won't change anything and keep going, cool. I love that for you. But just know, it's certain way you have to handle yourself with social media. You have to block a lot of people. You have to ignore a lot of people. Turn your social media off during the tournament, however you want to do it. But it's going to be something that's going to take on you mentally and emotionally. And that's different for women. You know, it's different.
Yeah. Very different. Very different platform for women for sure. And Angel Reese had commented on it after the game was over. She was had a couple tears in her eyes. She talked about how she hasn't been happy since they won the national championship last year because so many people are coming after her. She said she's been receiving death threats. She's been sexualized. She's been threatened. And these are all the things, unfortunately, it's the nature of the beast. So, you know, we just have to be mindful that what makes it more difficult is that when you are a professional, like a real professional in the WNBA or the NBA, you're more prepared for that moment. But these are college kids, and the college women's game is so big right now that they are getting attention like they are WNBA players. And when they're getting that much attention,
bucks, you're getting the big bucks even more. They're getting paid more than some of them, the WNBA players. So
it's true.
That's the crazy thing. It's weird to see that it's flip-flop, that college, they have less responsibility, getting paid more, no bills, than the WNBA players, and they're getting more attention. That early to get that type of attention is kind of crazy. You should be getting it in the pros, but if you want to get paid the big bucks, you're going to have some drama. You got to be able to handle it. And, you know, eventually these are the first, I'm going to say guinea pigs, but they're the first ones going through it to where now they can prepare the younger generation for what's to come when that platform gets to that stage. And I think the younger generation will appreciate them for it because they're going to be the first to pave the way. And hopefully they get paid, you know, more in the future. And I appreciate it. We all love it as fans, and we want to see the game continue to grow. We're all here for the girls, the W and college. And we said, it's fun. It's fun to watch. It's fun to see, but we want to see them stay mentally and emotionally stable as well.
Yeah, I love how the WNBA is now structured and how they are going to profit off of the explosion of the women's game. It's great because not just are these women performing at a high level and capturing everybody's attention, but they go straight into the WNBA season. It's not like the NBA draft where, okay, guys, play the Final Four, and then now there's 2 months before the NBA draft, and then there's another 3 months before the NBA season starts. Caitlin Clark is going to play in a national semifinal this weekend, and then in 2 months, she'll be drafted into WNBA, and then she'll be playing, right? She'll be playing this summer again. And I think for her and the WNBA, not losing that steam of all of the star power that she has and whoever else might come into the WNBA draft is great. And it's also to their benefit as well. You have a player like Paige Beckers. You have a player like Juju Watkins, Hannah Hidalgo at Notre Dame. These are women who are hooping right now at a high level, and they're not able to declare for the WNBA yet because they have to play 3 years. So now you're building up these stars in the college game, which, Danny, we're not getting in we're not getting in college basketball. I saw a report today that NBA scouts believe this is the worst NBA draft of all time because everybody is either going to overseas, the elite program that they have. I forgot the program that's in Atlanta. They got guys go to one. I mean, you got Reed Shepherd and Rob Dillingham from Kentucky. They weren't even starters for Kentucky, and they're going to be top 10 picks in the draft. They only played one year. I got to see Rob Dillingham like maybe five times max, but because they're not staying around in the NBA, in the college game, you're really not able to follow these guys when they get to the league. You're not building up.
Yeah, it's a little diluted.
And the love,
the portal, the leaving early, and the best of the young guys. There's not many of those young guys there, and the older guys they're not interested in, and they don't see the potential in them. So I get it. And the teams that are left, they're not showing many pro because the teams that are left are the good teams. The teams that stick together, guys that stay for 3 or 4 years, the guys that they've looked past for the last 3 or 4 years, and they don't see those guys high potential. So I get what they're saying. It's the weakest, but they say that often. It's the weakest draft. It's the weakest draft. I think they're going to find some hidden gems in the guys that are left. Yeah, but there's always going to be hidden gems. I think you're going to find that they slept on that's going to make a noise. Like a DJ Burns, nobody knew who he was. And people look at him and probably say, oh, he probably can't play. But if he gets in league shape, it's like he could be something. Like there's certain gems I think they can find in certain guys that are juniors and seniors that they might have overlooked that may get a chance and surprise you. So we'll see. But hopefully the college game builds up better like we all want as fans because it's – some people, it's hard for them to watch, and it's hard for them to root for their teams when they're constantly seeing guys come and go in portals. But I believe one day we'll get it back to where it's supposed to be or where it was.
I just hope for this. As we get close to Final Four weekend going down in Phoenix, which Danny will be in attendance for, I just hope it doesn't look like the UConn Invitational because the way they're smacking around teams, boy, like that. If they have double-digit wins this upcoming weekend, I'm just going to be like, this wasn't ugly. Fun. It's ugly, bro. A 30-0 run, not just a 30-0 run against a 16 seed, a 30-0 run against Illinois.
One of the top offenses in the country, right? It was a three seed. They were a three seed. But so they've been the best team in the country. And they will probably go down if they do that in this Final Four, they'll be one of the best teams in the history of college basketball. Yes. To do it back to back and the way they did it. So we had a good run in Carolina. We did it 1 year. That's it. You don't see it back-to-back years or the way they're doing it. And I don't think we've been doing any close to it. They're winning by 30. We won a couple 15, 20-point games. They won it by 30 against top seeds, and it doesn't look like they're slowing down.
No, it does not. When we come back, you know who is actually speeding up? The Philadelphia 76ers. We're getting some reports that Joel Embiid is probably going to return this week. What does that mean for the Eastern Conference? We break that down right after the break. We are back with Inside the Green Room. No Spanish today. Sure. It's been busy times around these parts. Let's get right into the National Basketball Association. Big time news coming in. We're hearing that Joel Embiid is going to return to the lineup for the Philadelphia 76ers. When he originally had his injury, it was reported that it was going to be a 6 to 8 week recovery time. So this is about appropriate time for him to get back out on the court. Danny, with Joel Embiid, the 76ers are obviously a team that you have to consider as somewhat of a contender in the Eastern Conference as it currently stands. On Monday night, they are a game and a half away from the Miami Heat at the seventh seed. So right now, Philadelphia is
two and a half behind Indiana, right?
Is it Indiana? And 2.5 behind Indiana. I doubt
they own no tiebreakers. So both of those teams, they don't own the tiebreakers. So it's going to be hard for them to catch. They at eight and more than likely going to be at eight. That's what it looks
like. And I think if you're a Philadelphia 76ers, you're not necessarily worried about your seeding. Honestly, you're just worried about where Joel Embiid is. And honestly, too, if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you at this point, would it be nice to win? Or would it be nice to potentially get up to the five seed or the six seed and play a Cavaliers team and have a better chance to win? For sure. But at the same time, too, you don't want to put too much wear and tear on Joel Embiid's body if it's not going to result in an NBA championship. So give me the Bucks. Give me the Celtics. It is what it is. We're going to have to play in one way or another, right?
Man, first of all, I need more energy for you, my dog. Like, you got to be excited. Joel is back. You know what I'm saying? Nah, I don't give a hit. What time
it
is?
I'm not excited. I'm not.
This is
I'm a
good
fan.
For
I'm
basketball, bro. This is why you're not excited.
I'm not excited about you. That's why I'm not excited.
I mean, talk about exerting energy. The fuck? He's been sitting out for 30 games. Exert energy. There's only 2 weeks left in the season. Exert him as much as you can. He's got the whole summer to rest. Get him out there. Get your seating. You need to get a Cleveland. You need to get a New York Knicks in the first round. You got to do everything you can to avoid Boston in the first round if you want to give yourself a chance. Yes, he's been out for a little while. Do I think they can do it? Yes. This is an X factor in the East. This is one of the best teams in the East. Just happened to land at eighth because he's been out for so long. I think they can get Cleveland. I think they can get Milwaukee. I think they can get the Knicks, if he is right and healthy, and they get D'Anthony Melton back. Only team they can't get is Boston. But, yes, this is a team just like the Los Angeles Lakers that nobody wants to see in the first round. You know, they don't want to face this team, just like the Golden State Warriors. Those teams get in, Phoenix Suns. These are teams you don't want to face in the first round because, realistically, they're not real 8-9 seed. You know what I'm saying? They're not 7-8 seeds. They should be 3 or 4 seed. These are top teams, top talent in the league, especially in the East with Philly. You have to consider them one of the top teams, and if not a pretty good contender when healthy. The only problem is if they get healthy. In New York, injuries were for them. They have issues with injuries. We're not seeing OG Anunoby might not be coming back. Mitchell Robinson's back. We might not see Julius Randle coming back. So this is where Philly needs to make the push. Overexert, get the hell out. You need to overexert everything you need to do because obviously there's no expectation with him coming back this late, but you need to start winning now or trying to at least win now with the group you have and figure it out from there. You have all summer to figure it out with free agency and cap space and all that. But the reason why you made all these trades and got these people in and you're trying to keep Joel happy, you need to show that you have what it takes to at least get the show glimpses of it. Make yourself at least get to the Eastern Conference Finals against Boston and lose. There's no first round exit. It's not acceptable with that man being healthy.
Yeah, that is true. I will say this though, Danny, I am maybe part of the reason why I'm so somber is because the New York Knicks have lost back-to-back games. But more
not too good talent. They lost to some tough teams. Well, OKC was a good team.
OKC was a good team. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander hit an amazing shot to win that game. And Jalen Brunson
should have dropped.
Yes, Jalen Brunson's not getting foul calls anymore. I don't know what's going on, but
some of them are fouls. Some of them he's fishing. So
yeah, he fishes for them. I admit that, but it is what it is. I think for the most part, though, as a Knick fan, it is tough because
This is the year. This was the year for y'all. It was supposed to be. Y'all just had injuries, but the stars aligned. You got the pieces you wanted. You have everybody you need to match up with Boston. Julius Randle, OG Anunoby. You got Alec Burks come off the bench. Bojan Bogdanovic off the bench. Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein. Like all these pieces.
Dante DiVincenzo.
Dante lighting it up. Dude.
I mean, bro.
Ill contracts. You know, contracts. Cheap ass contracts.
Yeah, bro. It's.
You have all the depth, the pieces, Tibbs, the coach you need. Joe Mazzulla, you know what I'm saying? Still young and inexperienced. this was the year the Knicks were supposed, and then the injuries right now is killing your energy. And not the fact that it's 1 a.m. over there, but the Knicks injuries are killing your energy. And I need more.
It's
from you,
so disappointing. It's so great basketball. Disappointing.
But they're still good enough with Jalen Brunson. And I said this earlier when I was on NBA Today. He is good enough to get you a series. I don't care who it is against, unless it's not Boston, but still avoid Boston. I think they can get Miami. They can get Indiana. They can get Cleveland. They can get Philly. And if that is enough to hold off to get those guys back for the second round, you can get Julius and OG back, then they can still make some noise. But at that point, the chemistry will be a little bit off. But Jalen Brunson is really good enough to get it done.
Thank you for saying that. I'm a little bit more optimistic now. Let's jump to the Western Conference, where we do have some injury news as well. This is very important because I was very, very, very confident in a bold take that I made that the Phoenix Suns would not make the playoffs. And a lot of that was because of how their schedule ended towards the end of their season and how difficult it is for them to score in the fourth quarter. But we have a major development as it pertains to the play-in race. As it currently stands, the Phoenix Suns have a half-game lead over the Sacramento Kings. Phoenix Suns number 7, Kings number 8, Lakers a game and a half behind the Sacramento Kings at the 9 seed. And obviously, you still have the Warriors and Rockets thing going on, but the Rockets do have a two-game – I mean, the Warriors have a two-game lead with those teams playing head-to-head on Thursday. But the bigger issue, Sacramento Kings. They lost Kevin Herter for the season. They have lost Malik Monk for 4 to 6 weeks. So he's not coming back unless they pretty much make it to the second round.
Western Conference. Yeah, second round or Western Conference Finals, basically.
Exactly. And for a Sacramento Kings team that does not necessarily have a lot of scorers, this is a
or the defense.
Loss.
This is or they don't have a lot of scorers. They rely on scoring.
Yeah, they rely on scoring.
That's a good 30 points out of your lineup. Out of your just out of your roster. So
it's tough, Danny. And I feel like I want to be able to retract my Phoenix Suns won't make the playoffs take. You know, people don't let you do that. Even though injuries have to be factored in. The Sacramento Kings, Danny, with the situation now, are they making the playoffs? Yes or no?
No. What's their schedule? Tell me who they got left. I need to know.
I mean, however it stands, they're going to end up pretty much being the eight. They're more than likely going to be the eight seed. So they'll get two play-in games, which means they'll probably play the combination of the Suns, Lakers, Warriors. But the remaining schedule for the rest of the year, they got the Clippers. Oh, my God, Danny. They might have only one play-in game. If I look at the schedule now, they play the Clippers Tuesday. Then they're at the Knicks. Then they're at Boston. They could probably get a win at Brooklyn, but then they're at OKC. Then host the Pelicans. Then host the Phoenix Suns. And then they finish the season with Portland. The way the Lakers schedule is set up, man, the Kings might only play one. You might get a rematch of last year's first round series between the Kings and the Warriors, but this time just in a play-in game. And if you give me Kings Warriors in a play-in game, it's going to be Warriors.
So they have Clippers. They have seven games left, right? They have Clippers. Who are the teams you name?
Clippers at Knicks, at Boston, at OKC, hosting New Orleans. Oh, my God. Hosting the Phoenix Suns. The easy games, quote-unquote, is at Brooklyn and versus Portland. But other than that, you're looking at a schedule where they could lose 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They can go 2-6 to finish the season. If they go 2-6, they're going to be in a play-in game at best.
They might be behind the Rockets at that point. So
yeah.
And if they're the 10th seed, they're going home, bro. They're not. they're not making the playoffs. It's sad to say because they had such a great year last year, such a great year this year. Malik Monk, sixth man here, should be. De'Aaron Fox, always great. Sabonis. Unbelievable double doubles catching Kevin Love. They just have a great group. HB, my guy, playing well. Like they had a good group. Mike Brown showing, you know, why he's been coach in the league for so long and getting head coaching jobs multiple times and being coach of the year last year. This is a tough one because how do you keep this group together? Malik Monk is up for payment this summer. Can you keep him? No, he's definitely not worth $9 million anymore. You know what I'm saying? You paid Harrison. You had to make some trades, move some pieces. This is a tough break for them. So it's sad to say, but I don't see them making the playoffs with these two injuries.
The development of Keegan Murray is going to be quintessential to this franchise moving forward. He's in his second year now. He did not have a great playoffs last year. They're going to need him to take another leap in order for this roster and for this team to get where do they want to get to. I think one more development that I did want to point out in the Western Conference before we get up out of here, the Dallas Mavericks have been absolutely hooping, and now they are a half a game ahead of the New Orleans Pelicans. So now, Danny, we have one of the spiciest matchups potentially in the first round of the Western Conference. The 4 seed, Los Angeles Clippers. The 5 seed, the Dallas Mavericks. Oh, my goodness, with the beef and the history between these two teams. That's the marquee series of the Western Conference.
Yes,
let me just ask you now, who would win that series? Clippers, Mavericks?
I need more excitement from you for this one, bro.
I can't do it, brother.
This is unbelievable. That's a matchup, boy. Boy. man, that's a tough one because you know how Luka does when he does the Clippers, man. But healthy Clippers, there's no betting against Kawhi for me. James Harden, PG, Russ is back now. Norm, they were rolling before All-Star break. After All-Star break, a little bit of shakiness, but they got Russ back finally. But I can't ever count out Kawhi and PG in the playoffs. I mean, they did one time, but when Kawhi is healthy, this is the first time I've seen him healthy this long. This many games of regular season and playoffs. So it's good to see him back in health and balling the way he's been balling. You know, they got Big Zoo. They got Tice over there. They got some good pieces. So, that's going 7 games, bro. Who has home
Clippers
court?
Clippers have home court.
They go 7 games and they let Luka get. Luka might get them in the LA. You know how Luka plays when he's in LA.
I would not want to see Luka and Kyrie in a game 7. That has to be the scariest duo to see in a game 7 in the NBA. I would not want to see them.
If Clippers don't get it done in 6, it's over for them. It's Dallas in 7.
Yeah, that should be fun. I mean, hey, listen, I know we spent a lot of time early in the show talking about the women's game, and obviously we still have the men's Final Four this weekend as well, but everybody knows. Everybody knows the NBA playoffs are coming, and best believe right here on Inside the Green Room we'll be all the way locked in covering it. So stay tuned, make sure you keep in locked with us, and Danny's gonna be all over the place this week. Make sure you follow him. I'll be in places this weekend. I'll also be on ESPN Radio this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, breaking down what's going on in the world of college basketball too. Fun times, Danny.
Yes, sir. I'll be in Atlanta doing BetCast again with TNT.
Nice.
Then I'll be Yahoo, of course, covering Final Four in Phoenix. So, yeah, I'll be doing a couple games this week. Need your expertise on this betting game. You know, I'm not a gambler, but I can tell you how the game goes. But, yes, I'll be all over this weekend. And after Final Four, I get a chance to breathe. But you might see your boy in Bristol, Connecticut, too, doing ESPN if I don't get the phone call. But until then, read, rate, subscribe, review. Yes, sir. And I'm going to need some Spanish next week, bro.
Oh, yeah. I got you. Guys, we'll see you later on this week for our other episode. See you until next time.